Parkcast, the UK's original theme park podcast.
Welcome back to Parkcast, park fans. If you don't know by now, if you are new around here, we are a podcast for theme park fans, and we try and be here every week with your daily dose of theme park nerdy chat. I'm Vex. Kev isn't here this week, but I do have a guest who I think you might know. The lovely Adam Hatton is with me.
Morning.
You had to get that one in there, didn't you?
I feel like it would be rude for me to not start like that.
It would be. Then no one would know it was you. Hopefully you are listening in the morning. If you're listening at night, that's just going to totally throw your body clock off. But anyway, we move on. Adam is here with me this week. Now, if you don't know him already, he does a lot of Disney content, especially on YouTube. That's probably where you will know him from. So we're going to chat about that. But we're also going to chat about a little project that he has been working with, which, if you're a theme park fan, could really interest you. It could involve 3 days out in exchange for your opinions. And we all know theme park nerds love to give their opinions. So I think there might be a few of you listening going, that sounds like it might be right up my street. So we will get into that. First, though, obviously, you are known for your Disney content. When did you very, very first go to Disney? Can you remember?
Yeah, so Disneyland Paris was my first soiree in Disney parks. And I remember my parents were actually telling us that we weren't going. Whereas apparently we were going on a camping trip. And then as we were sat in the car ready to go, we had that surprise moment when they said, "We're going to Disneyland."
You're one of the OG, like, those moments on TikTok where you see the parents do that.
If it was recorded, it would have been those.
We didn't have cameras back then. Not that I'm trying to age you, but yeah.
No, it's understandable. There was no cameras back then. Certainly not portable ones that were very convenient. But then I think I first went to Disney World when I was 16.
Okay.
And it was when that Iceland volcano went off.
And we got stuck there for a month. No.
Yeah. It was the coolest thing. The only downside of it was I had my GCSEs to hand in, so I had to redo them.
Doesn't matter. No way. So you literally couldn't leave Disney World.
It was like a homecoming as well, just going for the first time. But my family wanted to go to Universal, so we only did 2 days in Disney, which was like painful for me. But my family's slightly bigger. And then when I first went to Magic Kingdom, I said to my parents, with all due respect, I love you very much, but I am going to be doing the Keys to the Kingdom tour, and I will see you at the end of the day. this is my moment.
I found my place.
Literally.
Did you literally feel like that?
Yeah, I was so obsessed with Imagineering and like the history of it all, and I was basically going around with my camera taking pictures of sidewalks and trash cans and how they did all the detail and everything, because I first wanted to be an Imagineer. That was my childhood of growing up, as I wanted to be a roller coaster designer.
Yeah, amazing. And I mean, you didn't quite get there. Did you? You did work for Disney for a bit, though.
I did, yeah. So I did the Disney's Cultural Representative Program, which, if viewers don't know, it's basically a program where you can go and live in Florida for a year, working in the UK pavilion from the UK, but also if you're from another country that happens to be represented, there's other companies that are employing people for those pavilions as well. And you work in either food and beverage or merchandise. And then you get to share your culture with guests. You get to live on Disney property in their housing. That's for the college program. It was single-handedly one of the best years of my entire life. And then I went to work for Disney in their London office. I worked for 2 years for Disney Channel. I kind of sat between social media and compliance and loved that job as well. But London wasn't for me.
No.
Cities. I'm a country boy.
You need the greenery. I do think when I see those people who are like, they're like 18 and they're like, yes, I've just got my place to go and like work at Epcot for the year. Wow, I wish I could have done that. It wasn't even on my radar as an idea. I was like, I need to work in radio. So I was like, radio stations. But if I had my time again, I think I would have definitely tried to do that. Because what an opportunity. Did you find...
You can do it at any age.
Really, 41?
You can. They were honestly people that were in their 40s doing it.
Bye, family. I'm off for the year.
I wouldn't judge you.
I think, though, if I was working in, like, the UK pavilion, I'd try and like freak people out by going like full Cockney or something.
We have people asking us, like, oh, how long did it take you to learn the accent? They thought we were actors. I had a whole table of teenage girls burst into tears because I sounded like One Direction.
No.
Yes.
This is the thing that you are. Yeah, okay. Well, it sounds like a great experience, and I'm sure that that definitely set you on the path to where you've ended up now, which is full time, basically content creating. Now, you don't just do Disney, but a lot of your content is from Disney. You've just come off a Disney cruise.
Yes. Do a bit of Universal, done Centre Parks in the past.
I love Centre Parks.
Done some Merlin Parks as well.
Oh.
And I actually got my start in theme parks at Chessington World of Adventures. That was my first job.
What were you doing there?
I was an attractions operator. So my first ride was Griffin's Galleon.
Yes.
And Sea Dragons, Tomb Blaster.
Oh, okay.
And Tomb Blaster was the cool one.
There were more buttons to press.
There was loads more buttons to press. And it broke down all the time. It was great. I'd be like, yay, an evac!
That's what nerds are. That's what we want as well. Yes, an evac.
Literally.
So you found, even though you'd gone from being like a really enthusiastic guest working on the other side as well, that didn't spoil it for you?
No, if anything, it actually going behind the curtain and seeing how things are done just gave me a new appreciation for, certainly with Disney, like the level that they're willing to go to in order for a great guest experience to be had. I have so much admiration for what they do. And, you know, parks have changed a lot over the years. And Universal has, from where it was in 2013 when I first went to where it is now, you know, it's such an exciting time to be an enthusiast in this industry and even working in the industry. Just going into parks, I get the same feeling every time I go.
Yeah.
And I won't ever want to lose that. And I think it's that, especially when like you're seeing like the new CEO for Disney and everything walking the parks, I respect him so much for that, because I think that's how you maintain it, speaking to guests. And you know, there's people that watch the videos and they'll come up and they'll say hi, and then we'll get into a conversation and I'll be like, what have you loved about today, what could be better? And that's ultimately why I love this industry, because people are just happy to enjoy it. And like you said, we all have our opinions.
We do, and sometimes we get, you know, a reputation for being too negative as enthusiasts. And I like to try and think that most of us aren't. I think most of us are very passionate about the parks that we go to, and we just want them to be the best that they can be.
And that is it. We want it to be the best it can be. And we remember all the times that it was its best.
Yeah.
So if it's not held up to that standard anymore, we've noticed. And, you know, we noticed the lack of pennies in our pockets now.
Yeah, which is definitely an ongoing theme. And it is hard, I think, when you do have the memories of the good times and you want to live in them, and you go back and you're like, oh, this isn't quite the same. And you don't want to sound like you are just having a whinge. And I know that there's never an easy fix for these things. We can sit here in our houses and go, well, they just need to build one of these or throw one of these up, or they just need more staff on the rides or whatever it is. And obviously life is never quite that simple.
No.
But I do think some of the observations we have are valid. And I do think it shows when a park doesn't instantly dismiss those opinions because we are a group of enthusiasts. I've mentioned before that Europa Park they do a podcast because they want to know, or they want to integrate with the enthusiasts. Like, they literally said, the reason we're doing this podcast is to build a relationship with enthusiasts, because we know that they can help promote us. And they want to know what we're doing from our side. So let's foster that relationship and grow it as like a two-way street. And it works really well there. I know it's a park you haven't been to yet, but it's on your list for 2026. I think you're going to love it.
I'm so excited. Everyone I've heard, everyone I've spoken to about it has said great things and said it's operationally a dream. Obviously, it's kind of like a showroom for Mack Rides. So
yeah.
I know that they're willing to upkeep it well and stuff.
Yeah.
So I just can't wait. I'm so excited. But, you know, travel plans change, so anyone's listening that watches the YouTube channel, and for any reason I didn't go, I promise there was a reason.
Then you would get any emails going, oh, you said you were going to...
Please put the pitchforks down.
Do you get that? Do you find that your viewers are sometimes like, well, I've been expecting this from you, or you didn't do what I wanted you to do there?
So COVID taught me, never announce a trip until it's happened.
Okay.
Because travel plans change all the time, and COVID more so. And so now I wait until I'm actually on the trip. Things have been... I know that there's at least one or two vlogs in the can, and then we can kind of share the love and that it's coming and everything, get everybody excited.
Yeah, yeah. Do you find a pressure on creating content now? Because now it's like your full-time job. Do you feel that, like, I have to go and vlog this trip? I have to go and capture this content? Or is that still easy for you? It doesn't feel like a grind.
It's a really careful balance, because I'm very much aware that this is my livelihood. My livelihood is tied to the YouTube channel, but it's predominantly me going on holiday and filming my trips and posting that social media. It's not... If I get into the point where I'm going for work in my head, then that's when I think it's going to change, and that's when I think I'll be more critical. That's when I think I'm not going to be really engaged in the vlogs. So I did start going there. I got to the point where I was thinking, you know, I'm not having a good time today, so I'm just going to put the camera down.
Yeah.
And I had to have a real word with myself and say, I need to go at a frequency that I still love this, but not at the point where it becomes monotonous and I don't appreciate it. Because, you know, your average family going to Disney World for the first time is spending £10,000. And if that family is watching some guy on YouTube being like, oh, this churro stand doesn't look the way it used to, I don't like that anymore, you know, that a family doesn't care about that. They care about if they're spending $200 in a restaurant, whether it's good or not. You know, who they're flying with, are they going to look after them whilst they're on the plane? You know, is this hotel nice and clean? You know, those are the details that a family will care about. And that's kind of how I like mitigate it between, am I still passionate about this? Am I actually filming this for the right reason? And if I get to the point where this is feeling like work, then I don't ever want that.
Yeah.
I think that's when I'll probably take a further step back, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, I can imagine that. And you don't want to get to the point where you're just getting on the plane going, oh, I wish I wasn't going again. I can't ever imagine feeling like that about going to Florida, but like, you go so often that I could imagine a world where you're like, I just can't be bothered today.
I mean, there is a secret in changing it every single time. You know, every single time I go, I'm either doing a value resort, a moderate resort, a deluxe resort. They're all very different experiences. I will change if I'm doing Universal. I'll change if I'm doing Disney, just to make sure that every single time I'm going back, it's not the same trip I'm just redoing. And I'll focus on the parks that I didn't do as much last time. So like on my last trip, I did predominantly Epcot and Hollywood Studios. Next time I go, I'm doing Animal Kingdom and Magic Kingdom.
Yeah, yeah. And I suppose the good thing about Disney World is stuff does change so much all the time. Like even just, oh, we've brought out these new snacks or whatever. There's always like a constant, something new to report on every time you go. You're never going to be like, oh, absolutely nothing has changed since I was here last.
Places to eat as well. There's over 500 restaurants in Disney World.
Have you done them all?
No.
Not even close?
No, I wish I could.
You should do that. There you go.
I haven't even done all the resorts.
Haven't you?
Even though I lived there for 2 years and I wanted to. But like the Contemporary, for example, I refuse to stay in those Incredibles rooms.
Do you?
Have you seen them?
Is it like the Smiler room at Alton Towers? It's just like, I can't sleep in this.
Well, there's like... They've like got Incredibles laminates on the wall, and it's a very... I appreciate the design they were going for, but when it's $1,000 a night, I just can't. I'm like, no, give me like Grand Floridian for $1,000.
Yeah, yeah.
Give me the Polynesia for $1,000 at the very most. I very much like my annual pass discount, but until those rooms get refurbished, I'm not staying at the Contemporary.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's good that you've got a limit and you're not just like, no, I will just do anything that Disney touches sort of turns to gold for me. Have you thought about DVC?
Oh, I am a DVC member.
Are you? I was speaking to someone who's recently become one just on a bus the other day, and he thinks he's absolutely going to get his money's worth from it. I guess you do just because you're there so often.
Yeah, and for anybody listening who doesn't know, it's Disney Vacation Club. It's Disney's version of timeshare. And ultimately, I priced it. I'm a very numbers-based decision maker. I will do the breakdowns and everything. And I ultimately worked out that if I go to Disney every year, which I evidently do, if I'm going to do that for the next 48 years, which I suspect that I will, then the contract would have kind of paid for itself in 7 or 8 years.
Right, okay.
And, you know, I didn't have the money just sat there to buy DVC. I had to finance it and everything. But it's meant that in 7 or 8 years time, you know, I'm only 32 right now, I've hopefully got, touch wood, another 40, 50 years of enjoying theme parks, and being able to go there and not have to worry about the accommodation costs would be quite nice. It's not right for everybody.
Yeah.
And certainly if you're, you know, if you're leaning towards the value budget, you're probably going to be better off staying in values for the rest of your time going to Disney. But if you're on a moderate budget, deluxe, and you're thinking about it, then it's definitely something to look into.
Mm.
And Disney don't really do a hard sell if you go either. Have you been tempted to do it, Bex?
No, because we haven't done it as a family yet. So we have a 4-year-old. I've done Disney World in the past. My husband has never been. And we were kind of waiting for our daughter to just get that little bit older so that when we go, she can do like Rise of the Resistance and stuff from a height point of view, because my husband is absolutely desperate to do that ride. But we baby swap at parks all the time, and it's just, we're getting to the point where we nearly don't need to baby swap for most things at Disney. So we're kind of just waiting for that level. I don't know if I could commit to going every year, but I don't know. I might get the bug.
So you've been?
Oh yeah, I've been. Yeah.
Yeah, you've been. What would be your like dream trip? Where would you want to stay? How long would you want to go for?
At least 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I would like to stay at probably at least like the French Quarter sort of level of hotel. But I also, I don't know if I want to say this to you, I love Universal. So, I would probably try and do like a week at Universal as well. So this is what, I don't know. I don't know if it would work out.
I think the thing that will maybe change the game for you though is, and this is, and I get choked up about it every time I talk, so I'm going to try not to. It's not necessarily about your experience at Disney. It's the eyes of your children. It's the eyes of your family. It's the, like, whenever I go and I'm watching the character cavalcade come down and you're seeing these little girls going, Elsa, Elsa, like, that will break me. It's not necessarily, like, I love the parks, obviously. I love the detail that they go into. But actually, it's the family interactions you see and that you would obviously experience with your daughter as well. And living it through somebody else's eyes, that's the thing that is the magic.
Yeah.
And the thing that Universal definitely has, Epic Universe, but Disney has consistently.
Right.
And certainly with the characters.
Yeah. Yeah, I think what I need to do is go back. I think it's been such a long time now since I've been, and because we've never done it as a family, it is going to be a different experience. I would always say that I am a roller coaster nerd over and above a theme park nerd. Like, I absolutely love theme parks, but the big coasters are what really draws me into theme parks. So that's that's the other reason I think why sort of Universal has cried out to me, and why when we went for the Epic preview last year, we didn't even step foot in a Disney park. We just did Universal. But at some point I need to just do it and commit to doing it, and then I guess we'll see how it goes. And yeah, I mean, it's not something that I would write off in the future, signing up to it. Like, I know that for the next however many years, like you, I am going to be going to theme parks. So yeah, if it makes financial sense, then it could be one.
And my catchphrase from YouTube, which I'll use for you in booking your Disney trip, is treat yourself.
You know what, if it ever goes tits up with the content creation, just move into sales.
Do you know what? I thought about it. I'd love to work for DVC. That'd be great.
Oh, I could see you doing that. Or if all
Hi,
else
family,
fails,
welcome home.
TikTok shop. Slightly more budget version. Talking of content creation, I just want to touch on, there's so many theme park enthusiasts who see what you do, and other mm-hmm. people like Sean from Theme Park Worldwide, and they kind of go, I want to do that. What you guys do is make it look very easy, and you don't see the hard work that goes on in the background to be able to get channels to the levels that you are now at. But I think you also sometimes don't see the negative side of it, which is, I mean, even when I post a video about something slightly controversial, I'll get comments from people saying, and I've got quite a thick skin and I'll kind of brush them off. Does that ever get to you? Do you ever get to the point where you go, I don't need this hassle, actually, to just do my job?
Do you know what? There's a special on Netflix called Brené Brown, I want to say Call to Courage. And it's she's basically a research professor studying shame and everything. I watched that documentary and it genuinely changed my life. And it changed my whole perception of social media. It changed my whole perception of how viewer interactions that are negative on the internet, kind of where they come from. And she basically did a TED talk that went viral and she had loads of negative comments. And there's an analogy that she uses, or a quote she uses from Teddy Roosevelt, where he says, if you're putting yourself out there, if you're getting into the gladiator's ring, as it were, if you're taking risks, if you're fighting with lions, if you're doing all the stuff, you're actually presenting yourself to a stage, why should you consider the opinion of someone who sat up in the stands who will never take that risk, who will never get into that ring? And it just flicked a switch in my head that told me, if I'm in the ring, say you and I have a conversation, you turn around to me and say, Adam, you know, that thing you did, not great. You probably should have done better there. I'm going to fully invest into your opinion and everything. And that's not to say you shouldn't consider the opinion of other people that are viewers and everything like that. I do that on the regular. But one opinion shouldn't be the thing that changes your whole perception of yourself. You know in your heart where you're coming from, what you're doing, the motivation you're doing. You're trying to be a good person and everything. So just having that little filter of, you know, where is this opinion coming from? What's motivating it? Do I actually feel sorry for that person that this is how they're choosing to voice themselves? They might be dealing with something personally that's... I'm the mechanic for that. And it's just allowed me to make sure that when those comments are having, I'm perceiving them a different way. I'm not taking them personally. I'm looking at them very differently. But also, there is a secret to just not engaging.
Yeah.
And it sounds frivolous, and it sounds like it's easy to do, which, you know, we all know it's not. But at the same time, if you're not engaging, you're not fueling the flames.
Yeah.
Because the second you bring attention to that person's opinion, it's only going to amplify it.
Mm-hmm.
And that person's opinion is not necessarily what you want for your brand, for your channel, for your content. So it's taken a long process. Like, I've been doing this for 12 years. But if anyone's getting into content creation, if anyone's dealing with, you know, bullies or anything like that, I really recommend watching it. She's an incredible person. And she's been on a few podcasts as well, where she talks about shame and everything. And it just allows you to not necessarily build a thicker skin, but just to understand that this doesn't define you.
I think that's fair. I mean, you've made some really good points there. And as someone who lives this, you know, I think you can speak on this, you know, from a place of experience. And I think it's useful to know. I think it's useful to hear that, you know, that you don't have to take these things personally if you are making content. I think a lot of people are put off making content because they see the attacks that people with a platform get. And I always encourage anyone who wants to make content to just start, just pick up the camera, pick up the microphone, whatever you're doing. If you've got an idea for something, just start.
And that is the secret to it. Like, don't wait until you've got the best camera. Don't wait until you've got the best mic. You know, we've all got phones. They've all got cameras, predominantly. So that's when I would just say your voice is your biggest unique selling point. Your perspective is the thing that is going to give people a reason to watch you. Share your opinion.
Yeah.
In the videos, give that the mechanic that people connect with, because everybody's coming from a different perspective. You know, I'm going to review a park very differently than, you know, you're going to review a park with your daughter. You're going to be thinking about how much she's enjoying it. Someone who's coming at it from an accessibility standpoint, who's using a wheelchair, they're going to have a very different... And you know, there's other creators that we want to see in the space. We want to see everybody's voice represented on YouTube and everything.
Yeah.
And YouTube is that it is arguably the hardest platform to get into.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also the place that you can build the best community. Like the people that watch with the videos and engage with them, some of them have become very great friends, and it's having a community behind you it's like this ability to know that there is always someone fueling your flame.
Yeah.
And you just feel like whenever you're jumping off a bridge to fly, you feel a bit more confident that there's a soft landing there.
Yeah.
And if you can build that slowly over time, like, there's never rush to viral is my tip.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and
go slow.
There's been quite a lot of chatter about that in the theme park community, and, you know, people who want to have a platform very quickly and maybe like buy followers and things like that. And slow and steady, I think, wins the race, and perfect what you're doing over time, and you'll get more comfortable with doing it the more you do it. That first thing you post out probably won't get to very many people, but you just keep going, I guess, and improve on it.
Someone said to me, don't treat life as if there is shortcuts.
Yeah.
Pretend there isn't.
Yeah.
Even though you might get lucky, that's what a shortcut is. But, you know, I was on 2,000 subscribers for about 4 years. And in 10 years' time, I've obviously got 150. But I didn't know that was going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, I had to just kind of keep plugging at it and hope that one day somebody was going to watch, and then you'll find the video that hits, you'll find the style of content that connects with people, and then you start doing that all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, really good. And I think actually a lot of people wouldn't realize that you maybe sat at a lower level for so long, and that if you are sat at a lower level, that doesn't mean that it's never going to get higher.
It just means you haven't found your niche.
Yeah.
I think my thing was, I was trying to be a very broad YouTuber at the start. I was trying to do, you know, I grew up in the days of like Zoella and those creators and everything. And I wanted to be like them. And so I was posting these comedy videos that frankly weren't that funny. And
are
it
they
was
still
actually...
up?
No. It was actually me posting tips videos on how to apply for the Disney program.
Okay.
That connected with people.
Yeah.
And then it was vlogs from Disney.
Yeah.
So you never know what's going to be your thing, but you've just got to start.
Yeah.
That's one of the hardest things. And post consistently.
Yes. All great tips. So there you go. Take that on board if you are thinking about doing it, if 2026 is going to be your year. Now, what I wanted to speak to you about was this what would we call it? An idea that you're working with. There's a company called Enterpex.
Entertainment, experience, Enterpex.
I see what you did there. You made a jingle as well. So you are looking for theme park fans who can come and get involved in this. But what is the idea behind the company? What are you trying to achieve?
Sure. So Enterpex is a guest experience consultancy. And basically, one thing I noticed in going to like IAPA and all these industry events and stuff is that there's a missing link, and you'll probably agree with this, between what executive decisions are being made and what fans want and need. There's some communication there, but there's certainly not a lot of what we would call qualitative data. You've got quantitative data that is like attendance figures and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got qualitative data, which is going to be people's opinions, why people make decisions, all that sort of thing. And with Enterpex, we saw there is a gap in the market to build this link, and we can do that through mystery shopping as part of what we're doing. So we're building something called the Guest Collective, and this is basically something that anyone can join all around the world, where whether you're an enthusiast or just a casual park goer, you can sign up for free. You will then get invited to complete what we call the entry survey, and that's a short survey about 7-8 minutes that asks you your decisions about why do you go to parks? Do you wish there was more X? Do you wish there was more Y? Mm-hmm. How do you find accessibility? Do you have any needs that you would like to see fulfilled in the future and stuff like that? And then upon completing that, you've been entered into a prize draw. So at the moment, we're doing one, which is $1,000 Disney gift card.
Oh.
And then you also qualify to accept mystery shopper jobs. So these are basically a way to get your day out comped, where you're getting your admission and stuff covered in exchange for just filling in a survey at the end of it. So, and we're hoping that within the information that we're getting from enthusiasts, from fans, families, park goers, whatever it is, we can help take that information to parks and say, listen, you know, everyone's pushing for inclusion and accessibility right now.
Mm-hmm.
We think that there's an opportunity there. You know, we're not necessarily going to parks and saying, you're doing this wrong, and pointing at them. And but we want to have both the opinion of enthusiasts and park goers and everybody to say, no, genuinely, we can evidence the fact that this is what people want and need. So that we're building a better experience for everybody. That's ultimately what we want. We want parks to be providing that experience for us. We want to increase competition for great customer service and giving everybody the best day out possible. And, you know, I'm happy to share that as we've been collecting data and stuff like that, that one of the biggest things is value for money. That's the disconnect.
And you, I think sort of internally, I would say that's something that I feel that people are talking about and wanting. But it's interesting that you've actually got the data to sort of back that up. And what I guess you're seeing that what people feel like they're not getting that so much value for money now, or they want more.
That's the thing that people have identified as the biggest thing that's missing from the parks industry widely. It's not any particular theme park or anything like that. But, you know, if you've been going to places like Thorpe Park, Alton Towers, you for many years, you remember the days of like paper fast passes and the fact that that was just included in your park admission.
Yeah. And parking was included in your park admission.
And I think I would love a park to just have an experiment where they include the parking, they include fast passes, because I also think, and I know you were talking about Rat Pass in the past couple of episodes. I think that would relieve the stress on people trying to abuse the system who don't need it, which would then make it easier for people who do need it to actually access it in an efficient and clean way.
Yeah.
Because people would have a way to get a free bypass. I don't think being able to skip a wait should be determined by how many coins you have in your pocket.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And I would love a park to just go, give it a go, you know, just try it and see what happens.
Well, I'm going to blow your mind here, Adam, because guess what Europa Park do? Exactly that.
No way.
This park that's consistently highly rated by its guests and visitors, which offer, exactly that. And it's a question, you know, it's something that I've discussed with other enthusiasts and say, it works there. Why can it not work at some of our parks in the UK? And I don't know why we're not trialing it. I can't see a reason to not do it.
Because I think Holiday World in the US, they do free parking, free fountain beverages.
Really?
And something else free. I know it's like part of their like ethos and everything. But they have such great, you know, great affinity with their guests because of that. You know, they've got such a loyal fan base. And I would love to put this question to you. Do you think the Merlin parks would be better if they weren't all one big company?
Yeah, well, look, I stirred up the hornet's nest this week when talking about the Merlin parks, and it wasn't about the Rat Pass, it was about pricing and stuff like that. I think there's strength in numbers in some respects, but also it's kind of got to the stage where now that even the marketing teams are centralized and stuff like that, I think the parks are losing some of the things that made them special. And there are certain things that just can't be done on a group level really successfully. When you have Alton Towers, which is such a different park to somewhere like Thorpe Park, I just think it needs a real bespoke sort of focus on it. The point that I made was that I think the Merlin parks are too cheap, which obviously, like, not everyone's going to agree with that. And a lot of people say, well, everyone needs to be able to visit a theme park and everyone should be able to get in for a cheap price. My point was mainly about the annual passes. I don't think you should be able to get an annual pass for four theme parks plus the London Eye and Sea Life Centres or Madame Tussauds or whatever is still included in the Merlin pass now for £75 for a year. I think that is crazy cheap. And whilst it's value for money, I don't think you necessarily get a value experience out of it, because if everyone buys these cheap annual passes, what you see is a lot of guests in a park in a long queue, and the parks can't necessarily cope with that number of guests in the summer holidays, for example.
And it's a fair point to make, and how that could actually change if, for example, the passes went up, but maybe single park admission came down.
Yeah,
you know, there's ways to still have the park affordable. But I get what you're saying, where if someone, for example, is getting that admission for that cost and then is there every single day of the year, obviously that's not necessarily the case, but it is increasing the attendance and it's increasing the wait times and it's making longer lines for food and everything like that. But I think there's something to it, and there's a way to make parks accessible to everybody, affordable for everyone, but also find that balance of not overpopulating them to the point that when someone is going for, like, because at the moment, what's Alton Towers, 40, 50 pounds?
Yeah, but less than that, though. If you eat a day ticket, I can get one for £25 with a defence discount card. I think standard entry, if you book in advance, is about 35 plus your parking. There's a 15 quid on top. But yeah, so
I
so
add it on to like an overnight stay or something.
Yeah.
So I bundle it together. But if someone's, you know, someone's paying that £40 and then are walking into the park and everything's over an hour away, you go, hang on a second.
Yeah.
I'm not getting my value for money. So ultimately, I think there needs to be some recalibration.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's a one answer to the myriad of things that could improve.
Yeah.
But there's also not to say that people still go and have a great time.
Yeah.
And there's credit to be said for, you know, every time my family go to Legoland, come back and they say, we had a great day out, the kids had a great time. And I mean, we're a little bit more clued in. We like to look at crowd calendars. We like to go, you know, logically, this is a bad day to go. But not everyone's going to have that foresight to actually consider. I think you said something about bank holiday Mondays are...
Yeah, very. But do you know why they're a secret spot? Because most of the Merlin passes are blocked out on that day. So pass holders don't get... The platinum pass holders will get entry, but there's obviously not that many of them. But the Merlin, definitely the essentials. I think the golds are blocked out for some of the bank holidays. And there is just that psychological thing of, it's a bank holiday, theme park's going to be really busy, I'm not going to go.
Yeah.
So then the reverse is true. You go and you're like, wow,
I want to put it to the test this year. I actually got that Merlin pass this year, so I'm gonna see about it. And I think with Universal coming as well,
yeah,
I think there's a very big chance for shake-up.
I was going to ask you about this, because I guess this is something that, even though it's Universal, I'm sure you'd be more excited if it was a Disney park, but even though it's a Universal park, you must be absolutely buzzing that this is coming to the UK.
Honestly, since I would say 2019, when my friend Gary and I, if you watch the channel, you know Gary very well, we went back to Universal and we had the best experience. I think they've really invested in training their team members to be great advocates for great customer service. The food quality has increased substantially. And the thing I love about Universal, and this is playing into what we were just talking about, you can rock up on the day and not have to plan anything.
Yeah.
And have a great day out. Mm-hmm. You can buy the express pass that is obscenely expensive, but when you pay that high price tag, you do have short wait times. You walk onto pretty much everything.
Yeah.
And it includes unlimited rides on everything. You know, even Disney doesn't offer that with their Premier Pass. And with the opening of Epic Universe, it literally blew my mind. It was if they had a blank slate of saying, you have no budget, plan it, we'll look at the design, and they just went, approved. You know, there was, it didn't feel like, there's something in the industry called value engineering, where a lot of the times they'll say, okay, you need to pull back on this, you need to pull back on that. And I think that's when we go from a really great blue sky concept to a product that hasn't delivered.
Yeah.
You know, everything's been, you think about the value engineering behind Galaxy's Edge. You know, they were going to have roaming droids. They were going to have this interactive bar with a big fish tank that had a alien floating in it and stuff like that, that we ultimately didn't get. It's not to say that Galaxy's Edge isn't amazing, but it didn't feel like there was a lot of value engineering in Epic Universe specifically. It felt like walking into Dark Universe, seeing all the tombstones and the mist that's coming out everywhere.
Yeah, just incredible.
Stardust Racers is
It's so good. Is that what's on? You've got a print on the wall behind you. Is that a Stardust Racers print? Yeah, I was eyeing that up. I was like, oh, where's he got that from?
The photographer who took it on Instagram very kindly allowed me to hang it up in my house. And I love the attention to detail. It's the thing that really does it for me. And the people that I know that work at Universal Creative say that the UK project is like the most exciting thing that's happening.
Really? Because right there's this, even, I mean, here we go, classic enthusiast being negative. But there are people who are like, yeah, but it's not going to be the same as being in Florida because we haven't got the weather and we, you know, it's just not the same. You're not going on holiday. I am not of that mindset. I think if Universal are going to open a theme park, they're going to make sure it's bloody good. And I think we'll see more indoor attraction so that they can do 365 opening or 364 or whatever it was on the planning documents. But I don't think it's going to seem like the cheap cousin at all. I think it's going to, when we walk through those gates for the first time, it's going to be an incredible experience.
I think they've identified that this market is untapped.
Yeah.
As far, like Merlin's obviously here, but in terms of the, I think they did a survey that basically looked at the potential in this market, both with Europe coming over as well, and there's huge opportunity to offer a more premium theme park day out that is gonna just blow people's minds to the point where like that's where I want to spend my money. That's ultimately that's how people make a decision to go somewhere, is they go, this is a great day out, I want to go, I want to go back. And just because it's gonna be a very different experience from Orlando, but I think it's just going to be an equally great experience that is completely different.
Yeah, yeah.
For reasons that we want.
Well, you think about...
We want it to be indoors.
You think about the great dark rides they've got in Orlando, not just obviously the two at Epic, which Monsters and Harry Potter, which are just next level crazy good.
I could have cried when I came off Monsters Unchained.
I thought I wasn't going to like it because I don't like scary rides, and I was properly like, oh, I don't know if I can do it, because again I had to baby switch and ride it on my own. I was like, if there's jump scares, I'm going to be freaking out.
I was scared. I was going through that line. I was like,
but it was. I just loved it. It was just, I couldn't believe what I was seeing on that ride. I was looking at things, going, is that actually an animatronic? Like, how have they done that? And then
My favourite thing about Monsters Unchained as well is that it was the first attraction in Epic Universe to hit 1 million guests.
Yeah.
And it did that with a consistent average wait time of about 20 minutes.
Yeah, the throughput is crazy.
It just proved, the turntable that they have as the boarding station, they patented that.
Have they?
Came up with that. Yeah.
And, oh, interesting. One thing,
this is a really good detail that I found out on my last trip, which I love, and this is why I admire Universal so much, especially with their care of team members, because I think if you look after team members, you look after the guests, is that when it starts getting less busy, they will start loading every other vehicle.
Right,
and
okay.
That's actually to reduce the strain on team members.
Oh, so nice.
It just makes it more convenient for them to not have to keep pushing down heavy lap bars and everything when you don't have to. And that attention to detail in operations is chef's kiss. it's everything I want in the theme park industry.
You're going to love Europa Park, honestly. I know you've said a trip isn't a trip till it's happening. You need to make sure that happens this year, because you're just going to be like, Bex,
it's top
oh
of my
God,
it's
it was
on
all
my
true.
To-do list. It's on my to-do list right here. Book Europa Park.
You need to do it. I mean, we're all absolutely buzzing about Universal coming to the UK. I think now that we know it is going to happen, and it's not a maybe, and it's not an if, and it's not something that's going to get cancelled. The next few years are going to fly by as we start seeing that park going up. How do you think the other UK parks will compete with that? And I guess this ties into your guest experience feedback and the research that you've been doing, because surely that is where they're going to have to step up to be able to compete.
I wish I had a psychic glass ball that would tell me exactly how they could, because Merlin is so big, and it's not like where Disney's obviously the biggest, but it's only got 7 parks right now, or 7 resorts, should we say. They're dealing with so many different microclimates around their parks. Every single park is different to operate. You know, I worked at Justice of World Adventures. I can imagine that if you plopped me down in Gardaland or something, I wouldn't have a clue how to work there. So they're obviously acquired all these parks over time. I think there's going to have to maybe be a recalibration of, like you said, re-acclimatizing to smaller operations to actually cater for the people locally, because they're all local parks predominantly.
Mm-hmm.
I think Alton Towers has the potential to become a destination resort. And I think if there was ever going to be a resort that could compete with Universal in the UK, it would be Alton Towers.
Mm-hmm.
So I would honestly, or rather I'd hope to see major investment at Alton Towers more than anywhere. And I would love to see them just invest in theming more. You know, I love that they're building new roller coasters. I love that they know that that is a way to get people through the door. But they can become dated very quickly, I think.
Yeah.
Without theming. And, you know, I like going on attractions that have rock work around them and, you know, have a story. Like, I think storyline is everything in a theme park. So, you know, there's huge opportunity if they're willing to invest. And I think time will just tell if we actually end up seeing it. Or there has to be recalibration, like you said, on if they're not going to compete with Universal on that front, change the operation so that it is a cheap, fun, local day out that isn't trying to compete with Universal, but is offering something different that locals want to go to and can afford to go to and enjoy.
Yeah, I think we have mentioned on the podcast before, Universal is not going to be a cheap day out. I'm going to guess, I mean, we're talking about in 5 years' time anyway, but you're going to be probably looking at least £100 a ticket each to get in. And if Merlin, you can get in for around the £40-50 mark, it is going to affect people's decisions. And not just Merlin parks, you know, our other like local amusement parks, places like Blackpool Pleasure Beach, which offer something that Universal just can't, which is the history and the nostalgia and those attractions that have stood the test of time. I think if they add into that an excellent guest experience and you go there thinking, I have had value for money today, whether I've spent £100 at Universal and felt like I've had value for money, or £40, £30 at Blackpool Pleasure Beach and felt like I've had value for money, if you can feel the same at either of those two places, then I think that's what will keep them going. I think if people start going, well, it was only £30, but actually we only got on three rides, I'd rather spend more.
Getting into Enterprise and everything, most people determine how good their day out was based on how many rides they got on.
Yeah.
It's that plain and simple.
Yeah.
And, you know, if rides are down, it's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And even just in upkeep and maintenance, it needs to be at the forefront of any park's mind, because I went to Busch Gardens last year. Oh my God.
This is what I keep hearing.
I've never seen such poor operations. It was
It
was excruciatingly painful to be stood in what looked like a short line, but ended up being 30 minutes because they're only running one train. And you're just staring at an empty platform for about 4 minutes until the train comes back around.
Oh, that would do my head
in. I'm walking through this like Mayan theme with "Shut Up and Dance" playing. I was just like, "What is going on?" And it was weirdly quiet, and that actually wasn't a good thing.
Yeah,
because even though the wait times were, they looked reasonable. Obviously, they weren't. There's no vibe there.
Yeah,
you almost need a park to have life in it. You need it to have people moving and enjoying themselves to actually feed off that, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And it's interesting you mentioned that, because I haven't been to Busch Gardens. And on paper, like, I absolutely need to go there. I need to get on Iron Gwazi. Like, there's no doubt about it. But every single
review...
Hands
down, one of the best roller coasters I've been on.
But this is the problem. It's like, I really want to go on that roller coaster. But every review lately, especially from people who've come from the UK, is it's a nightmare. And it puts me off. As a guest, it puts me off going.
Valid.
Yeah,
just that is valid.
Sort it out. Can I just get a token to go and ride Iron Gwazi, and then I'll come back out and
tell
I'll get on with my day?
Give them a phone call. So there's this company called Enterpex and this guy called Adam Hatton. You should have a phone call.
You definitely should, because right now I'm not coming and visiting you because your reviews are so bad. I think it's interesting, and I hope that actually the parks are responsive to what you're doing and what you're trying to do, and I hope that they will be like, yeah, actually there's some value in this for us. And I think I mean, ultimately they want to make money. So I hope they can see that by joining these dots, that that will ultimately result in more money.
We started having conversations in the past few months with a few parks, and they have been overwhelmingly receptive.
That's good.
And they definitely see the value that can come from the data that we're offering, because we're independent.
Yeah.
You know, all these parks have information that they've collected themselves, but they're ultimately only getting information from people who came. Mm-hmm. They want information from the people who didn't come.
Yeah.
Why they didn't come.
Yeah.
Or if they did come and never came back, why didn't they come back? You know, we want to answer those questions for the industry and ultimately make it so that whenever you go to a theme park, you have a great day out, no matter how much you're spending. You know, yeah. We want it to be that you pay £30 and you come back saying, I would have happily spent £60 on that day.
Yeah. Yeah, all valid points. How do you then, if I'm like, okay, this sounds good, I definitely want to go and mystery shop some theme parks, what's the best way to get involved with that?
Sure. So if you go to enterpex.com, so that's enterpex.com, click on guest, and there's a big join now button. There's a bit of information about what the guest collective is, how you can sign up. You'll basically just fill in a basic form that gives you some optional demographic information, and that's how we can help partner specific demographics with specific campaigns that a operator might want. You don't have to complete that information. It's entirely up to you. And then once you've completed that, you'll automatically get sent the entry survey to complete your questionnaire. And then once that's done, you have been kind of pre-approved to be able to accept mystery shopper jobs. You'll be entered into the competition that we're currently running at the time. And then we will basically reach out to people as and when parks are looking for people either locally or people who they actually want to see traveling from a further distance.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll reach out via email and let you know what's coming up.
Easy. Sounds like there's absolutely no downside. It's free. No, that sounds amazing. I'm sure if you're listening to this and you are a theme park fan, well, if you're not a theme park fan, I'm not sure why you're listening to this. You're probably bored out of your mind. It definitely sounds like a great opportunity. And not only do you get a day out, you hopefully actively contribute to parks being better overall. And we actually see some real changes in them, which I think is very, very exciting.
No, it's enthusiasts running this as well.
You yes, know, I think that
it,
is
we're
important.
Doing it for the good of the industry.
Yeah, exactly. You genuinely want to see the parks be better, and I think that is something we can all agree on. It's been wonderful chatting to you. And so you've mentioned Europa Park. What else have you got on your 2026 bucket list? Obviously, until you're on the plane, we know. No one hold him to account once he says these parks.
The top of my list is Dollywood. I don't know if I'm going to make it this year with the budget and everything, but I've watched so many vlogs and it looks like such a magical place.
Yeah.
I would love to just experience some of the Six Flags parks. I've never been to any of those.
Yeah.
But I've got the Merlin annual pass this year, so I'm hoping to go to Alton Towers and Thorpe Park. I haven't ridden Hyperia yet.
Oh, okay. Well,
so I'm looking forward to getting on that.
Yeah, I'll be interested to know your thoughts on that one. For me, I don't think it's as intense as some people think, but okay. Yeah. But then a lot of people say they do find it very, very intense. So I think it's one of them. Well, that's interesting. I think it'd be interesting for you to spend quite a bit of time in the Merlin parks as well, having spent so much time in Florida and kind of seeing how the two compare. I will be interested to see your feedback on that throughout 2026.
I'm going to go down memory lane at Chessington for sure.
I hope it doesn't spoil your memories. Are you a fan of
Paw
Patrol?
Hard to do.
you just can't wait to get on Chase's chasing roundabout or whatever it is.
I'm sad that Wild Asia is gone, because that was my first ride that I worked was Cobra.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I love the music, the
I mean, was it just you singing?
Me behind the fountain. Hello.
I would love that. Before you go, I have one final question for you. Just gotta ride it. This is the part of the podcast where I always ask a guest, what one ride, usually a roller coaster, I will expand it to ride, but what one ride do you say we've all got to go and ride? Imagine all the roller coasters in the world are about to be destroyed. Which one are you going to save, and why should we all go and ride it?
I'm not sure if anybody else has said this one, but I'm going to say Incredicoaster, formerly California Screamin'.
No one has said that one.
Disney's California Adventure. It is. I don't know what I look for in a roller coaster. But rewrite-ability is up there and fun is up there. And yeah. that roller coaster just has it all. Like, I can get off and get straight back on because yeah. it's got a launch in it. It's got a slow lift in it. It's got fantastic theming now they've added The Incredibles, but also just the music as you're going around.
Yeah.
You know, you're going around these loops and everything. It's da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Oh, it's just great. I absolutely love it. And it's got almost like a wooden frame.
Yes, yeah.
For a steel track roller coaster. Yeah. And it's just awesome. I can't recommend it enough.
Amazing. Well, no one has mentioned that. And it's good to see you're not totally negative against anything Incredibles themed, just the hotel rooms at the Contemporary.
I just don't want to... I would happily stay there if it was a moderate price. But at a deluxe price, nah.
But maybe Enterprise could get involved with Disney and you could give them that feedback.
See? Yeah, we would love to work with Disney. And we can only hope that there is a day that we do.
Yeah, I think that would be amazing. I hope that you get there one day. I think you deserve to. I think that you'd obviously have a lot of decent feedback to give them. I think you'd be the perfect
person.
But also
what you're... I have to kind of shout for what you're doing as well, because I would have loved growing up to have a podcast like a podcast to actually listen to and be like, I'm not alone in this, because I grew up in a village literally in the middle of nowhere. There was no one who understood my love of theme parks. I was such an anomaly. And so what you're doing is absolutely great, and keep going, keep doing it. And anyone who's listening out there that thinks, like, you know, I'm the weird one who likes theme parks, you're not. There's a whole community out here, and it's a really great place to coexist as well with enthusiasts and people who love theme parks and connect on social media as well. You know, you'll find friends for life in this industry. It's great.
I think that the important thing to remember is we're all weird here together. We are absolutely the weird ones, but that's fine. No, thank you for that. You make me blush. And I mean, I'd probably go back a bit further than you. But yeah, when I started getting into roller coaster enthusiasm, literally the internet was just starting. And we just had message boards and things like that. And we were scamming.
I remember Towers Times.
Towers Times, you know, still going.
That was the only thing you could do, was go on Towers Times. Like, ooh, what's the latest news? What is Alton Towers building now?
And someone had scanned in a really bad photograph that they'd taken on like a Kodak disposable camera.
They'd taken it to Boots and printed it out. And
they literally had good times.
Good times.
Adam, it's been absolutely fantastic talking to you. Thanks so much for coming on podcast. Good luck with Enterpex. Don't forget, if you do want to go and sign up to that and you want to go and do some mystery shopping at some theme parks, how exciting. It is enterpex.com. I will stick the link in the description, so if you've missed that, you can find it there. If you haven't already, do hit subscribe so you don't miss an episode. I am trying to be here every week, but sometimes it's just not possible. So that way you will never miss one. If you'd like to leave us a review, I always read them. Try not to be too mean. And if you don't already, come and follow me over on Instagram or TikTok. We're having lots of fun over there. Till next time, though, we've been Parkcast.
Parkcast. The UK's original theme park podcast.